sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, happy Tuesday, everybody. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A lot of basketball tonight. It'll be Bucknell at home with Holy Cross in the opening round of the Patriot League Tournament. It is March, and it's time now for Patriot League Tournament play. Holy Cross and Bucknell coming up, and that will be at Soika this evening at 7. And it will be 20th-ranked Penn State against 16th-ranked Michigan State in the Jordan Center, and that will tip off tonight at 7 on beginning at 6:30. You'll hear Bucknell on Eagle 107. So on this senior night, three players are going to be honored. Well, I think there will be a couple of others, too. I think Grant Hazel's going to be honored tonight. Stephen Beattie will be honored. Two hardworking guys that you never get a chance to see play. But these are the guys that you do see play. Curtis Jones. Curtis Jones began his career at Indiana. He then, after 2 years, transferred to Oklahoma State, where he graduated. He is not a fifth-year player. He is a fourth-year player who's a fourth-year graduate student. This year for Penn State, he had six double-figure games. At least to this point, he's had six double-figure games. He had 18 and was critical in the win over Alabama. He had 18, including 11 in a row, in the critical win at Michigan. He had 16 in the Palestra against Iowa, which supplemented the 23 from Isaiah Brockington. He has 502 career points, of which 180 have been this season. He is 6 points away from his season high in points in his career. And, of course, Curtis Jones has been very, very important to what Penn State has done this season. He's been important as a shooting guard. He's been important as the third point guard. And in Myron Jones' absence was very important to Penn State's success. Curtis Jones will be among those honored this evening. Then there's Mike Watkins. Mike Watkins is someone that where program loyalty has meant something. We'll talk about that with Lamar Stevens in a moment. But it's the program that has been so loyal and so supportive of Mike Watkins. You watch that Jordy story about Mike, the neighborhood he came from out of Southwest Philly. And here at Penn State, certainly not the cult kind of culture he grew up in, but one he needed. And when he had a bump in the road here or there, Penn State basketball was there for him. And believe me, Mike's been disciplined by Penn State basketball. This is not a case where, hey, it's Mikey, he'll be all right. Mike's been disciplined by Penn State basketball over the years because he needed it. And he's responded to it. So this is what he's done on the floor. 1,157 points. In the 124-year history of Penn State basketball, he is 25th all-time. He has 944 career rebounds. In the 124 seasons of Penn State basketball, only Jesse Arnell has more. 33 career double-doubles. Now, again, yeah. When did they start recording double-doubles? So let's be fair. But 33 career double-doubles, second only to John Amici's 38. 265 block shots, second only to Calvin Booth. And there is nobody on the planet that is going to catch Calvin Booth. But 265 block shots for Mike Watkins in his career. Then there's Lamar Stevens. Lamar Stevens came in 4 years ago as part of that heralded class. The goal was to get Penn State to the NCAA tournament. Well, they're about to find out in about, 12 days that they're in? This is what he has accomplished. Of course, he was the NIT Most Valuable Player 2 years ago. First team All-Big Ten last year. He has 2,174 points in his career. He is 39 shy of tying Taylor Battle's record, 40 from breaking the record. He's been in double figures 113 times in his career. He's been in double figures in rebounding 16 times in his career. He's had 42 20-point games in his career, including 9 this season. He has been the personification of loyalty. When it came time to make a decision, he decided to come back. That was the pivotal moment of this season. It wasn't in season. It was off season when he said, I will come back and play my senior season at Penn State after going through the NBA draft process. He has been loyal to the university. He has been loyal to the community. He has been loyal to the athletic department. He has been loyal to the basketball program, and he has been loyal to the fans. And above all, he has been loyal to his head coach. Every interview he does, he talks about his head coach. He's always had his head coach's back. And he's played that way. When you need your star to be your star, he's been the star, both on and off the floor. He's been everything that you can ask for in a Penn State student athlete. And Lamar Stevens will be honored tonight along with Mike Watkins and Curtis Jones at the Bryce Jordan Center. It's been an incredible career. They've had to fight through a lot to get to this point. Lamar, by the way, as he starts tonight, will do what he's done in every game in his career. He will start the game like every other game in his career. He has not one time come off the bench. Obviously, they've got a huge assignment tonight in Michigan State, which is playing maybe its best basketball of the season. Now, they've hit a pretty good spot in the schedule. They hit Nebraska and played Nebraska on the road. Okay, that's one. Then at home, they had a really tough, hard-fought game, but it was at home, and they finally won, and they outlasted Iowa in that one. And then they hit Maryland at just the right time. Maryland's exhausted. I don't think Maryland's going to win tonight at Rutgers. I think they're too tired. They've only been playing six guys, essentially. Six guys. Ricky Lindo comes off the bench. That's kind of it. Kind of it for Maryland. They don't really have a deep rotation. And I think it's finally catching up to them. They barely survived the Minnesota thing up there, and then they've had so many close calls, including at Michigan State. Michigan State then beat them. Michigan State's playing well, though. Cassius Winston, despite everything this year, everything. The loss of his brother, which was traumatic. He's been able to overcome that. And down the stretch, he's playing offensively his best basketball, except in one area. He turns the ball over too much. He had six turnovers the other night. And Maryland's not a high-pressure team. He still had six turnovers. Xavier Tillman has played really, really well. Really well. He did a great job, I thought, on Luka Garza. He got two fouls early in that game. And then in the second half, he really played well. So give him credit for that. And they've always been able to get somebody else, like an Aaron Henry one night or a Rocket Watts the other night, to be the third guy. And their role players have been guys that understand their roles. Really important. All right. Let's get to Matt Leon joining us from Philadelphia. Sir, it's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Great to be with you.
Any thoughts on the Eagles end up talking to certain people? So what do the tea leaves tell you, at least as we start March?
I think the Eagles will target speed. If I had to guess, I would think wide receiver early, but I think they just need speed everywhere. They were a very plodding team. They weren't a big playmaking team. And I think that's the number one. I don't quite put it at best player available type situation. They just need speed almost across the board. Like, even when the defense played well, it wasn't a defense that changed games with big plays. So I think they need playmakers and speed.
Okay, so there's that part of it. Now let's shift gears to the basketball part of it. The Ivy League tournament will be coming up. How do you see that shaping up?
Well, I think you've got Yale, Princeton, and Harvard all in. No surprise there. And you got the Quakers fighting for that fourth spot. Beating Brown on Saturday was huge.
And the tournament's at Harvard, right?
Yes, it is. It is at Harvard. Penn picked up that win on Saturday at Brown, and it was a complete pendulum swing of the odds and projections, as now Penn owns, like, the tiebreaker over Brown. Everything swings towards the Quakers, and the last weekend is favorable to the Quakers on paper as they take on Cornell and Columbia at home. And Cornell and Columbia are a combined, I think it's 0-28 on the road this season. So if the Quakers win out, they will be the fourth seed. I think it's anybody's tournament. I think Penn has shown they can beat everybody in this league.
Right.
They can also lose to everybody in this league.
Right.
But it will be a fun tournament. I love the way the Ivy does it, where you actually kind of have to play your way into You have to earn a spot in the tournament. You don't just get one because you're in the conference. I would have to, if I looked at it, even though it's Harvard at home, I would still say Yale's probably the favorite. But one thing to kind of keep in the back of your mind is Penn gives Yale fits. They beat him at the Palestra. And Friday night, they had a 10-point lead with a minute 39 left and ended up losing in regulation.
Yeah.
But for 38 minutes, they really drove Yale nuts until they couldn't handle the press in the final 90 seconds or so. It was a really, you know, an unbelievable meltdown. But aside from that, they play them really, the matchup just really points to Penn's favor. So that could be a wild card, because I think right now you would have a Penn-Yale semifinal matchup. And I would think Penn might be the team that Yale wants to see the least in that first round.
Because the matchup is not good for Yale. I mean, it's just about matchups. I mean, it's just you got a position guy that they don't match up well with, and that's one of the problems.
One of the things Penn does really well, and a lot of it is to credit the senior guard, Dev Goodman, is they drive Azar Swain, Yale's fine shooting guard, nuts. Swain in two games. Swain's about a 50% three-point shooter in Ivy League play. Overall, in the two games against Penn, he was 7 of 30 from the field. So I think that's kind of the big – people look for why does Penn drive them nuts. I think, you know, it's that, and they've got a fine big in Atkinson, who's had a great year, but he is – neutralized by Penn's A.J. Broder, who really is a – when they're matched up one-on-one, Broder probably plays him to a standstill when Atkinson has the ball. Broder really carves up Atkinson when A.J. has the ball. So if you look – those are two of the things right there that that are key. But Penn doesn't have the X next to their name yet. They still have work to do. The arrow is significantly pointing in their favor now, but – got to wait and see. It's the Ivy League. Anything can happen. And I saw that Friday night with my own eyes.
Right. Well, here's the other part. You just described every conference in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, yesterday, Creighton's playing St. John's. Okay, which was the ranked team in the top 10?
Right.
I mean, that's the way it is. And then Villanova, of course. Dick and I both thought Gillespie might not be playing. It turned out he did play, and they lost to Providence. And Providence is just a rock solid, tough basketball team.
No question about it. It's why the NCAA tournament's the best thing going, is we're talking about. Once you get to March, you can go through the analytics and the numbers and all that, but you put it on the court and anything can happen.
All right. Very quickly, the Villanova part of it, what read do you have on them right now at this stage?
I'm sorry, you broke up. What'd you say, sir?
I said the Villanova part of it. What's your read on them right now?
They're very solid. The game, Gillespie wasn't right. They had some guys foul out late in that game. Yeah. I think Villanova's going to be fine. You're probably talking, and I don't really crunch the tournament bracket before. I think they're probably anywhere from a 3 to a 6, depending upon how the rest of the season goes. Opponent, I wouldn't want to play a Jay Wright team in March. He's got a little bit of a track record of success, so
I've noticed.
They'll be fine. But it kind of going to the earlier part of the conversation. It's all matchups. It's all who do you get in end up with in that second round when you're pretty much playing a team probably as talented as you, and it's just a matter of how does that talent balance up against where you're talented and where you're weak.
Exactly right. As soon as you get to the round of 32, suddenly it evens out dramatically.
Yeah, you can't. There's not a – most of the time in the first round, if you're a 1, 2, or 3, I mean, obviously there are upsets, but for the most part, you're just better than the team you're playing, and you don't even have to be on your game to advance, and that ends after that first round.
My friend, I know you have work to do. We appreciate your time as always.
Thanks for the time. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
Matt Leon in Philadelphia giving us a read on what's going on with the Eagles, Penn, Villanova. So always great to have Matt with us on the show today. All right, a little bit later, Chris Soleri from the Lansing State Journal will join us to talk about Michigan State, which is coming off that great win at Maryland on Saturday night. And they will play Penn State tonight in the Jordan Center at 7. I'm beginning at 6:30 this evening. Yes, it is the ESPN Super Tuesday game of the week. And Bucknell's got Holy Cross tonight. That will also be at the 7 o'clock at Soika. You'll hear Doug Birdsong's call of that beginning at 7 o'clock this evening on Eagle 107. But Penn State tonight and Michigan State in the Jordan Center. Penn State's won 21 games this year, the 21-8. And I know people have talked about what's happened in three of the last four. Interesting, I was listening to somebody talk about Wisconsin the other day. And they were talking about Wisconsin and said, you know, it's amazing. Look at Wisconsin. At one point, they were 4-4 in the league. Now look at them. Well, you know what? I thought about that for a second. I thought, wait a minute. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Penn State was 2-4 at one point in the Big Ten. Penn State's won 9 of its last 12 games. Right now, they're ranked 20th. And Michigan State is ranked 16th in the nation. One of the keys tonight, one of the many keys, and there'll be a lot of keys in a game like this. But one of the many keys tonight will be Jamari Wheeler staying on the floor. He had 2 fouls Saturday at Iowa. That did not help the cause at all. And he needs to stay on the floor, and he needs to play all out every second against Cassius Winston. He did that the first time. You know, when Winston still had 20, I think Winston had 25 in the first game, some number like that. Still at 25. That's how good he is. And I thought Wheeler did a great job on him the first time, and he still gave up 25. But you've got to be able to put that kind of pressure on him. I think Winston had to run so much in that game. That's why he missed the free throw late. Then there's Tillman. Now, Winston and Tillman, keep in mind with them, neither one of them wants to foul. And Tom Izzo does not need them to foul. He doesn't need them to foul. He needs them on the court. So I think you can actually get some buckets against these two guys because of that. Interesting. We're going to talk about the NFL Combine, which just completed over the weekend in Indianapolis in just a few moments. Thanks for joining us on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. It's championship time. It's March. Patriot League tournament begins tonight at Soika. Holy Cross against Bucknell. You'll hear it on Eagle 107. Doug Birdsong with his usual level of excellence and excitement. Also, the Big Ten Wrestling Championships later this week at the Rack in Piscataway. Penn State with a trio of number one seeds and 2 number two seeds. The number ones, of course, Nick Lee, Brooks, and also Vincenzo Joseph, the number two seeds. Roman Bravo Young at 133 and Mark Hall at 174. So Penn State poised for another potential Big Ten championship with some big point getters there at the top. A lot of bonus points. We're going to talk with Jeff Byers about that later in the week. We mentioned Bucknell and Holy Cross tonight. Meanwhile, the Super Tuesday game of the week, it'll be Penn State, ranked 20th in the nation, against number 16 Michigan State tonight in the Jordan Center at 7. We're on the air beginning at 6:30 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And that should be quite a matchup between the two. Michigan State has hit a pretty good spot in the schedule. They won at Nebraska. Then they came home and beat Iowa. Then they went to College Park and beat Maryland. That was a tired Maryland basketball team on Saturday night. Played at home. They played as hard as they could. The crowd gave them as much energy as they could. Michigan State jumped them early, got to the lead, never even came close to relinquishing. Well, the only time they came close, they got to an early lead, and remember, Maryland tied the game at 23. And then at the end of the first half, Michigan State has an 8-point lead. Looks like Maryland may be able to cut it down to 5 or 6. Missed it, and then Cassius Winston put home a 60-foot shot. If that tells you it's your night and not the other guy's night, that will do it for you. And Maryland just could never really mount a run against Michigan State Saturday night. Just couldn't do it. Michigan State entered the season ranked number one in the country. They've had their ups and downs. No Josh Langford all season. That's hurt. Cassius Winston has played great. Xavier Tillman has played great. They seem to get contribution from either Aaron Henry or Rocket Watts on a given night, and then they've got a lot of role players. But I'll tell you, young guy to look for Michigan State, Malik Hall. Right? He may not score, although he did. He scored in double figures the other night. I think he had 16 the other night against Maryland. That was only his second double-figure game of the year, but you know what? He is going to be a really good player for them, really good player. Penn State playing at home, senior night. We talked in the previous half hour about the incredible careers of Curtis Jones, Mike Watkins, and Lamar Stevens. They will honor them after the game tonight. After the game tonight. NFL Combine has come and gone. Next up will be Tuesday, March 17th. 2 weeks from today will be Pro Day at Penn State. It is expected on that day that Yetur Gross-Matos will run, and it's expected on that day that KJ Hamler will run. As for the rest of the Combine, late last week, we had a chance to catch up with Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon.
Oh, it's great to have me on, and I did sort of enjoy that, especially the flourish at the end. A great way to finish off that call. That was pretty tremendous.
That was awesome, wasn't it? That was great.
No, that was great. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get a read now. When you're at the Combine, what are you looking for? It's one thing for us to sit there on the outside looking in and go, oh, hand measurements and 40 times and things like that. What do you look for?
Well, I mean, more than anything else, the combine, the stuff that really matters, happens behind closed doors. It's the stuff we don't even get access to. It's what goes on in those hotel room suites when a prospect comes in and meets with ownership, meets with the front office, meets with the scouting department, and they go to sort of get a chance to interview this player during that formal interview process. And then the other important place is the hospital, actually, the physicals. These players, you know, for example, Zach Bond, the edge defender, outside linebacker for Wisconsin, was talking to us about the physical and the process there. He said, you know, you go there, you wait for 3 hours, you finally get poked and prodded and tested. But that's key to a lot of these evaluations from these teams, especially when you think about a player like Tua Tagovailoa and his hip injury, his history of lower body injuries. The medical evaluation process is going to be critical for him. And so, you know, that's the stuff that really matters at the combine. The stuff we can see, well, you do sort of want to see how they move, how they test. The testing is just getting underway now with the wide receivers, the tight ends, and the quarterbacks throwing tonight. So you do want to see how they move, how they change direction, how fluid they are. And, you know, and depending on how that looks, depending on what you see there, how they test, then it takes you back to the film. You know, if somebody runs faster than you might have expected, you want to go back to the film and see maybe if you missed something. If somebody runs slower, well, did it really hurt them when they were running routes? Did it hurt them when they were trying to get yardage after the catch? And so when you're watching the testing as it gets underway tonight, look for the change of direction, look for the burst, the short area quickness. But really the big stuff happens behind closed doors.
Anything on the measurables that has...
Wow.
Made you sit back and go, okay, I'd like to look a little bit more at this guy because of the measurables.
Right, and I think the one that sort of struck people, we've all sort of anticipated that Joe Burrow is the first quarterback off the board, but then he comes in with a 9-inch hands, and people might say, well, hand size doesn't really matter at the quarterback position, and it can at times. It's another instance where you want to go back and you want to look at the film. And for example, two quarterbacks last year came in with 9-inch hands. One was Drew Locke from Missouri. The other was Brett Rippon from Boise State. Now, these were both quarterbacks that I liked in last year's draft. But you see right. That number, and what do? You go back to the film. You want to see, do they have fumble issues in the pocket? Are they going to lose the football when they're hit? And do they have difficulty throwing in inclement weather. And when you watch Drew Locke on film, you don't see that. His last regular season game, it was a game against Arkansas in a sweaty, cold, windy kind of day. He had no trouble throwing the ball. He still had zip. He still had great ball placement. But in Rippon's case, that Mountain West Championship game at Boise, he was in the snow. He couldn't grip the ball. He couldn't throw it. They almost turned into a one-dimensional running team as a result, and he did have fumble issues. So now, get that number from Burrow. You want to go back to his film. Now, he didn't have fumble issues. There's not a lot of evidence of him really playing in weather, so that might be a concern. So the hand size for quarterbacks, that is one that people will look at. And the other that people like to look at, particularly when you get up front, the offensive and defensive lines, the edge players, that length. It's why a player like Javon Kinlaw, the defensive lineman from South Carolina, is rising the boards. He has tremendous arms, tremendous length, tremendous wingspan. And he said today when he was addressing the media that the thing he's working on, the thing he's trying to get better at is how to use these hockey sticks. That's what he calls his arms, because they're so big. But that length is going to let him move players around. It's going to let him push in the pocket, get those hands up. You're going to knock down some passes at the line of scrimmage. That's why a guy like Javon Kinlaw is really moving up boards.
Yeah, it's interesting because Joe Burrow's last three games were in domes.
Yeah, I mean, he played, you know, playing in the SEC, playing in domes. You don't get a lot of cold, rainy, and wind. And when you think about Cincinnati, you're going to get some cold, you're going to get some rain, you're going to get some wind. So it is something to think about there.
And to the credit of Cincinnati, when you mention it, it depresses people. All right, so I want to get to a couple other guys. Justin Herbert is interesting in that there are no two opinions the same about him. What's your opinion of him?
Right. Well, I think he's a very impressive quarterback with the potential to be an upper-tier starter in the National Football League, but it is going to take, you know, when you get past Burrow, when you get past Tua, when you start looking at the rest of this quarterback class, the fit and the development are going to be critical for these players. And, you know, with Herbert, the plus sides, you get the athleticism, you get the arm talent. He has an absolute cannon for an arm, and he can make throws anywhere he wants on the field with pretty good ball placement. He can make the back shoulder throw 40, 50 yards downfield. There's evidence of them doing that on tape. The problems come in a couple of different ways. The Oregon offense is a tough evaluation when you're trying to figure out what a quarterback can and can't do. A lot of one-read throws, a lot of design throws, smoke screens, bubble screens, you know, one-read type concepts. Not really a true NFL offense, which is why Senior Bowl week was big for him, but he handled himself well down there, showed he can run more of an NFL offense. And another question mark is this. Has he sort of tapped out as a quarterback? Has he sort of hit his ceiling? Because he's got a long, you know, experienced record at Oregon, but is there really room for growth there? And so that's what scouts and evaluators are going to figure out. But I think the right fit, the right offense, you look at the Chargers perhaps at 6, maybe even the Panthers at 7, Justin Herbert could be a very good quarterback.
So I want to talk about the Georgia guys for a minute. Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm.
Yeah.
Eason was replaced by Fromm at Georgia, so he transferred to Washington. I know you did an extensive write-up about his ability to use the middle of the field. So what has been a pleasant surprise to you about the film evaluation of Jacob Eason of Washington?
Yeah, and it is that, you know, that ability and that willingness to attack the middle of the field, that it might even be more the willingness than anything else, because if you think about where the college game is played right now when it comes to offenses and how they're attacking defenses, so much of it is done like we just talked about with Oregon and Justin Herbert, where they, you know, they'll attack the sidelines, they'll attack near the line of scrimmage, and they don't really challenge the middle of the field too much. But you watch Jacob Eason in that offense at Washington, he's attacking the middle of the field, he's making reads to attack that area. And when you look at studies that show where passes are completed in the National Football League, they're completed most of the time up the seams, right? Because you get so much single high, cover one right. coverage in the NFL. You're going to see it a ton. Maybe you don't see it as much in college, but you still need to attack that area of the field if you're going to have success. And Eason's willingness to do it, his ability to read that area of the field, it's a credit to him and the quarterback and the development that he's gone through. And it shows you that, you know, he's not going to have to learn that. He's not going to have to refine and develop that when he gets to the NFL, which is why I think, you know, when he throws tonight, he's going to put on a show because he has a cannon. And I think teams are really going to like what they see, both when they see him throw tonight and they see his willingness to attack that area of the field, which a lot of other quarterbacks won't do.
Now let's get to Jake Fromm. Interesting. Because here's a guy that when he throws fewer than 30 passes in a game, Georgia has success. When he throws more than 30, Georgia has limited success. What do you think of Fromm pre-snap? What kind of difference can he make? And then post-snap, how is he?
That's a great way to frame that question, because when you think about Jake Fromm and you try to look at him from an evaluation standpoint, where he stands out is from the neck up. He's a very smart, experienced quarterback. You watch him pre-snap. He's active at the line of scrimmage. He's changing protection. He's calling out potential blitzes. He's adjusting the plays at times. They asked him to do stuff like that when he was just starting out as a freshman. They put a lot on his plate from a mental perspective. And, again, not something a lot of these other quarterbacks are asked to do. Most other quarterbacks, we know what they do before the snap, right? They looked at the sideline. They see what the coaches are holding up on that big old play sheet and poster, and that's what they do. They do what the coaches tell them. But Fromm is making these reads and these calls at the line of scrimmage, so I think NFL teams are going to love that about him. Now, there are limitations to his game. He doesn't have the upper-tier arm strength. He's also a quarterback that may have sort of reached his ceiling as a passer because he is very experienced. You don't know how much room for growth there is. Does he really have that high of a ceiling when compared to the other guys? Maybe not, but I think he's got a great floor as a passer. And if you look at where he could be and what he could ultimately be, a worst-case scenario from him might be, long-term backup, number two, spot starter type guy that can get you a couple of wins if you need it, and that would be worst-case scenario for him. And so I think teams are going to love him. They're going to love him from a mental perspective. When he gets into those hotel suites, he's going to kill it on the whiteboard. And I think a team like Chicago, if they're thinking about maybe getting some competition from Mitchell Trubisky, Fromm would be a perfect fit in that offense because he makes the right decisions, gets the ball out on time, in rhythm, puts it where it needs to be, very accurate in the short area. I think he could probably run that Chicago offense better than Mitchell Trubisky right now. I'd love to see him in Chicago.
Yeah. You mentioned Tua earlier. Obviously, the focus is on the hip. I've got it. I understand that. If the one area I'd be worried about with him is that each ankle has taken a beating the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's a great point. You look at the injury history, it's not just the hip. He had the two ankle injuries. He had the surgery before the LSU game, and they brought him back for that. And so it's not just the hip issue. It's a history of lower body injuries, and you wonder about the wear and tear, potential problems down the road for him.
Yeah, and that's what I look at with him. When he's throwing the ball, he's a beautiful ball, and lefties are deceptive, so it looks like it's floating and it's not.
Right.
Okay, I want to ask about the running backs for a moment. There's some interesting backs in here, and there's DeAndre Swift, there's Dobbins, and then there's Jonathan Taylor. And Jonathan Taylor received a lot of accolades in college at Wisconsin. Saw him play against Penn State. What do you think about Jonathan Taylor as a pro?
Yeah, it's a great way to frame that question. And, this Wisconsin offense this past year, they really tried to get him involved in the passing game and to use him as a receiver more, because that's the name of the game in the National Football League, right? If you're a running back, then all you can do is run the football and you can't really contribute in the passing game, whether as a receiver or a blocker. Well, given the name of the game is passing in today's NFL, you might not find a home. And so they tried to get him involved that way. That's going to be the big question mark. That's what we're going to be looking for, as he goes through the combine and this pro day, as people go back to his film. Can he really contribute, or is he a guy that you're going to have to take off the field on third down? Because if that's the case, that really sort of devalues him from a valuation standpoint, because we're seeing now running backs, unless you're like the truly elites that can do it all and can stay on the field on all three downs, your Ezekiel Elliott, your Saquon Barkley's, those guys that can't do that, they get pushed down boards because it makes more sense to draft a guy that could be a slot receiver that you'll probably play more than a guy that has to come off the field on third downs as a running back.
Mark, I want to get to a couple of Penn State guys before I let you go. Let's start with this. Edge rusher obviously is going to be a premium for anybody. Chase Young tops that board. What about Yetur Gross-Matos? How do you see him figuring into this?
Well, when you look at the premium that teams place on the edge position, a guy like, Gross-Matos is going to get pushed up boards anyway, because people, teams need depth at the pass rushing position. It's almost like, the bullpen, right? You can never have too much pitching in baseball. You can never have too much edge rushing when it comes to the National Football League. And he's shown that flexibility where he can run the arc, he can use that athleticism, use his length, which he shows on film. But he can also teams now take edge rushers and they're willing to sort of kick them inside or have, three or four edge rushers on the field on certain passing downs. And so the value of the position is going to make him a valuable asset to teams. He spoke to the media today. He talked about his upbringing and what it's taken to, get him to this point and how, you almost couldn't imagine that he would be here with a chance at an NFL career. Again, when you think about him walking into a hotel suite to look at a coach, to look at potential general manager in the eye and talk about his story and his background, teams are going to love that about him. So I think, you know, he's probably somebody in that day two range, but probably earlier on the day two side, given the talent and the need at that position that so many teams have.
There are a lot of wide receivers in this draft. In fact, half of them are from Alabama. Just kidding.
Right.
There are a lot of wide receivers in this draft. One of them is K.J. Hamler. Now, I don't think K.J. is going to run his 40 there in Indy, but he's going to run it here on Pro Day. So what can K.J. Hamler bring to the table that's going to interest some people?
Versatility and positional flexibility, you know, at the wide receiver position. Is he somebody that, you know, with his size, with his measurables, how I anticipate he'll run at 40 when he does it at his pro day, he's somebody that he can use in the boundaries as well as inside of a slot. He's somebody that obviously you want to get the ball to in space because of the change of direction ability he has. He's somebody that also could look at, you know, the third phase of the game, special teams. He's somebody that looks like he can contribute in that phase of the game as well. It is a very deep wide receiver class. You know, Daniel Jeremiah over at the NFL Network said he could anticipate maybe 27 wide receivers coming off the board in days one and two of this draft, which would be a new record. I don't know if we get there, but with that number of players, you know, K.J. Hamler is in a very good position where, you know, an offense is going to look at what he can do on film. An offense is going to look at ways that you can get a player like him involved in so many different facets of your offensive attack and your passing game, and even your running game, getting the ball on jet sweeps and stuff. He's going to find a nice home. I think he's going to go very early on day two.
Yeah. With all the depth at receiver, I've got Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb. Which one of those three would you pick?
Oh man, I mean they're all great options. But
I just gave you an embarrassment of riches there.
Yeah, I mean, can I have all three? No, I mean,
yeah.
when I look at these guys, I mean, I think all three are potential game changers in the National Football League. But I keep the name of the game right now is speed. Speed just kills in the National Football League. Yeah. And Henry Ruggs, you know, I was talking to some of the other writers and some other people around the league. People are sort of guessing at what number he's going to post in the 40 when he runs a little bit later. There's nothing he could run that would probably scare people. He's going to put up a great time, and it's going to be backed up by the film, the change of direction, the burst. You know, you can get him one step, a slant route, get a little bit of leverage on a defender, and he can take it to the house. And that changes games in a flash. And so I think of those three guys, they're all great talents at the wide receiver position, but if I had to choose one of them, I'd choose Ruggs.
Mark, brilliant work. We appreciate it very much. We appreciate the time you gave us today very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was a blast. Enjoy the combine. Always fun. And thanks again for having me.
Mark Schofield inside the pylon. Great to have him with us. We had Kim Jones on yesterday getting her view of the combine. And Mark's now view of the combine as well. Again, Pro Day at Penn State is 2 weeks from today. Expect K.J. Hamler to run his 40 on that day. Expect Yetur Gross-Matos to run that day as well. But again, 2 weeks from today, starting I think at 10:30 in the morning, it'll be the pro day for Penn State. It's always an interesting day, and of course, it's something Matt always looks forward to as well. All right, a lot more to come, including Chris Soleri joining us from the Lansing State Journal tonight. Bucknell, Holy Cross, Eagle 107, start of the Patriot League tournament at the Jordan Center tonight. Nittany Lions and Michigan State at 7. I'm beginning at 6:30. Today's show's brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.